Welcome to Planting Pinellas, the podcast that digs deep into the heart of gardening in Pinellas County, presented by Master Gardener volunteers of the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. I'm Charlotte Vaughn.
I'm Alan Shapiro. Whether you're a local looking to connect with your community or a visitor curious about your area's culture, conservation, and all things green, this is the place for you.
Join us as we explore the people, places, projects, and of course, plants that make Pinellas a thriving hub of sustainability, innovation, and natural beauty. From gardening tips to environmental initiatives, we've got the roots of Pinellas covered. So grab your gardening gloves and let's get started. Hi there. Welcome back to Planting Pinellas. It is July and it is hot. So we are going through a series of the 9 principles of Florida-friendly landscaping, and so far we've covered 3 of them.
I thought it would be a good idea just to remind everybody what we've covered, and you can certainly go back and listen to our episodes because there's lots of good information in there. The first principle, the most important one, right plant, the right place. That's achieving a healthy, low-maintenance home landscape that starts with putting the right plant in the right place. Select plants that match the site's soil, the light, the water, and the climate conditions. The second principle was water efficiently. So an efficient irrigation system conserves water and helps to ensure that fertilizer and other pollution doesn't flow into the water bodies. One little caveat, it is July, it is our rainy season, don't necessarily need to water.
Yeah, you really should have your sprinkler system turned off and then just use it on the days that we really need it.
Yes. Third principle, fertilize appropriately. And let's go back to our ban. Mm-hmm. There's a fertilizer ban now, so you shouldn't be able to buy fertilizer, at least in Pinellas County. Go back and listen to our episode about all the different municipalities and their fertilizer bans. But if you have proper fertilizer, you can have an increase in flowering and fruiting and corrects nutritional deficiencies. It can enhance the plant's appearance. But again, you want to do it appropriately. And that's an important piece. So what are we going to be talking about today?
Today is mulch. And when we started planning for this episode, I think we were kind of saying, how in the world are we going to have an actual conversation about mulch? And as soon as I got into it, how are we going to keep this less than 30 or 40 minutes about mulch? Because it's so fascinating. There is really so much here. But before we jump back to that, just a preview of what's still coming. Next month in August, we're going to be talking about attracting wildlife. And I love how the timing of these topics keeps working out because next month they have what they call the Great Pollinator Census. So look that up if you're not familiar with it to be ready. And we will get into that more in that episode of what that is, how it works, and how you can engage in that participatory science project. After that, we will talk about managing yard pests responsibly. So there's some wildlife that you want to attract. There's some that maybe you don't and you want to manage, and we'll talk about how to do that in a Florida-friendly way. Recycling is something we all know that we should be doing, but we don't always think of it in the context of landscaping. And I think that's a fascinating topic. I'm excited about that one. And then towards the end of the year, we'll be talking about managing stormwater runoff and protecting the waterfront. And those are 2 separate principles, but they're really so highly integrated. And all of them are so integrated. We can't have a conversation about any one of these things without mentioning at least 2 or 3 others, because they just are so connected to each other that it's the whole picture of how it works together to make that Florida-friendly landscaping flow the way that we want it to flow and really work.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%, and we can't forget the other principles as we're talking about mulch today, which is really an important one. And we're going to actually connect some of the dots to the other principles as we get into mulch. The first question about mulch is, why do we care about mulch? And I agree with you in terms in looking and preparing for this episode. I was like, yeah, how are we going to keep this to 30 minutes or so? But there's so much more to it when you start really getting into it. Yeah. So I guess that's really the first question. Why do we care about mulch?
Well, some people care about it, honestly, just for how it looks, because it can be sort of a finishing touch on an otherwise maybe sparse landscape or even a full landscape. That adding a mulch, and when I say mulch in this context, I'm talking about maybe the preconceived notion of a packaged product that you would buy in a store, big box store, you know, landscape and gardening supply store, whatever, that we'll talk about what is mulch in a minute. But just in the context of what naturally comes to your mind, whatever that is, that we think of it like kind of a finishing touch. It looks good when it's used in a good way. But there's more to it than that, because the mulch itself, and in this context, I'm really talking about anything that covers bare dirt.
Right.
So any kind of ground covering, whether it's a plant or a plant product or some other naturally occurring substance or a man-made substance that covers the dirt, that it can actually help reduce the spread of weeds in your landscape, because they have less opportunity for those seeds and roots, whatever, however they spread,
yeah,
to get in contact with that dirt and grab onto it and start to grow.
Going back to what is mulch, you know, if we just do a quick search, what is mulch? A layer of material spread on top of soil to protect and improve plants and soil they grow in.
Yeah.
So anything you put on top, a piece of cardboard.
Within some context. Within right. some, we'll get there.
Right, within some context. But the point being is that mulch by itself is just, as you said, just a covering. And it helps in so many, many ways. In a number of the videos that I was watching in researching, you know, this episode, they talked about it as being a miracle. This miracle cure that you could have for your garden in some ways, because you talked about, you know, controlling weeds, which is a really, how many people want a weed in their garden?
Not in this heat.
Not in this heat. And so the mulch would do that. One other thing is erosion control.
Right. I think that's a big one here.
That's a huge one.
Because we have such intense rain here. And this time of year, it's almost daily. And we can go weeks at a time where somewhere in the county has at least gotten a quarter inch of rain, maybe 3 or 5 or 7 inches like we had a couple weeks ago here. And so having that much rainwater coming down, even on a mostly flat landscape, the water has to move. If it can't move down fast enough, it's going to move across. And it's picking up things as it goes. So it may pick up some of your mulch, but it's easier in a way to replenish that top layer of mulch that might get washed away versus replenishing your healthy soil that you've worked so hard to cultivate there.
And we'll talk about having to replenish mulch later on mm-hmm. in the episode. It's something that has to be done when you have organic mulch that you're using. I think one of the other interesting things from my perspective, and it goes back to, you know, let's go back to the principles, right? We talked about stormwater runoff, mm-hmm. you know, that actually mulch can help to reduce that.
Yeah.
You know, because it's holding the soil and it can reduce that runoff because it's absorbing that. And so it helps your plants and decreases the watering needs that you have for your plants.
Now, it's interesting to make a distinction here yeah. between organic mulch and inorganic mulch.
Okay.
So organic mulch, you think of something being organically available in a spot. It's something that came from a plant, or it's a plant-like material versus something that was never alive. So inorganic mulch, we have examples even right here in the county that people use rocks, that lava rock or seashells. There's other kinds of inorganic mulch that you can use. There's even recycled rubber, and we'll talk about maybe some context where that could be beneficial, but is it the best choice in a home landscape? Probably not. And that's right. really what we're targeting here is just the average gardener, the average Pinellas County resident of what do I need to do in my little space of this county? And that rubber mulch, that, you know, the inorganic in general is usually not the greatest because it absorbs and holds more heat. And we're already hot enough. You don't want to be baking your plants.
On a homeowner's mm-hmm. landscape, again, there may be some applications in other places. There can be some cases, I guess, if you have a path that you're using.
Sure, like a gravel pathway or stone tiles or something that you put out.
Right.
There can be applications for it. And we're not saying not to use it, but knowing the right place to use it. I think really focusing on the organic mulch, it has more benefits than an inorganic mulch. So they both have benefits, but an organic mulch is going to have added benefits. And that would be things like adding nutrient back into your soil that as an organic mulch decomposes and breaks down, it putting those nutrients back into the soil where your plants can benefit from it. So nitrogen and other things that we can't go out and buy as a fertilizer, if we put down compost or pine bark or leaves, those things that contain nitrogen naturally, as they decompose, are going to release it back into that soil. And that's not a regulated product because it's not packaged and synthesized in the way that the commercial type fertilizers would be. So that's something that we can still use here in the summer, is those organic matters that are benefiting the soil. And even the texture of the soil is improved by it because it's chunky. And so it allows the air and the water to flow through the soil.
The other benefit is we talked about moisture retention. Mm-hmm. So having the organic mulch on there would keep the soil a little bit wetter. So you're not going to have to water as much. The other thing is temperature regulation. That's an interesting one. We think that the temperature below the mulch at the soil level would be hotter because it's covered. And that's not true.
Well, it's insulated. So in the wintertime, it actually will retain some warmth when you need it to. But in the summertime, it will retain the cooler temperature for longer because that mulch is providing a barrier between the elements that in the air and the ground condition that is already existing. So where it would be cooler overnight and then the sun comes out, that the mulch absorbs a lot of that heat before it gets directly to the soil, compared to if you have just the bare soil, then that surface level is going to heat up very quickly. And if you have young plants and seedlings there that their roots are still very close to the surface, then they're going to get dehydrated so quickly. Keeping that insulation level of the mulch, and that really comes back into what it does and how it's protecting the ground. And the ground is what nourishes and supports your plants. So keeping healthy soil is the first step of keeping healthy plants. And mulch is a huge part of that. So we've got two basic types of mulch that I already mentioned. There's organic, which is something that has come from a plant. And then there's inorganic. And that is something that it can be a naturally occurring substance like a rock, or it can be a man-made substance like plastic is sometimes used as a ground cover and a mulch. And you see that a lot in agriculture where they'll spread these long sections of plastic and then cut or burn a hole just big enough for the plant that they want. Yeah. And it's great for weed suppression. But if I'm given the choice of a package of strawberries that I know was grown surrounded by plastic and another one that I know was not, and I understand how plastic can leach into the ground in the microplastics that we see getting into our ocean water and everything else, all else being equal, which one do I personally pick? I'm going to avoid the plastic. So that is a concern. And some people think, well, I'm not going to use these plastic sheets in my yard. They might be using landscape fabric. And that landscape fabric is
plastic,
a type of a plastic in those fibers to hold it together. And that does break down over time. And that has been shown in some IFAS studies that it has leached microplastics into the soil, that you can pick up what's left of the landscape fabric and you really can't get it all out again. So then you plant your vegetables in that spot and they can be absorbed into that. And we don't fully understand the impact that that can have. So is it something that we would recommend? Maybe not. So it exists, but it also holds more heat. So where the mulch that would be the organic mulch is going to help to insulate the ground from the heat, those fabrics and plastics are going to more absorb the heat.
Yeah. And then it will, in terms of, will it enhance the soil itself? No.
Not really.
So, and again, that's, I think for us as homeowners, that's another benefit of what we're trying to do here, using organic mulches.
Yeah. And even on the fact of the rocks and the shells and the things like that, where they are going to absorb and hold the heat more quickly and they're going to transfer it into the soil more quickly. So there are IFAS studies that have shown that the temperature level of a landscape that uses rock or shell as a mulch is significantly higher. And I'll even throw in artificial turf, because it is a ground cover that is inorganic, that it is significantly higher temperatures on those inorganic surfaces compared to any kind of an organic surface. And that can be grass, that can be plants, that can be bark mulch or leaf mulch or whatever, that the organic mulch is the one that is helping to regulate the temperature. Inorganic is actually elevating the temperature. And it's hot enough already.
No, you're right. And so for homeowners, organic mulch would be probably the way to go.
But what are you going to pick in that?
But what are you going to pick?
Because there's so many kinds. This is where I started to go into geek mode. And if you've been listening so far, just hang on because here we go. So types of organic mulch, and these are plant or even animal matter, but it reduces heat and evaporation. Plants.
This is one that was fascinating to me, researching this particular episode. And that one was really a living mulch. So ground covers, eventually when they cover up, they keep the soil in good shape.
And those roots hold on to the soil.
And those roots hold on to the soil. It doesn't wash away. It retains more moisture. One of the fascinating things from my perspective is this living plant cover, ground covers that can act as mulch.
Well, if you think about it, when you are in a natural area or you're driving through a well-manicured neighborhood, you would think it was rather odd if you drove up to a property that was completely covered in wood chip bark mulch. You don't think of it as being the whole picture. It's supplemental. It's a finishing touch. It fills in the gaps, but it's not something that you want everywhere. So we tend to see a lot of turf grass. We see a lot of other kinds of plants that cover the ground, and they can be native plants. They can be Florida friendly plants, but they're just covering the ground literally in whatever way.
Yeah.
And that can include trees and shrubs too. Anything that is covering the dirt is benefiting. If it's not invasive, it's benefiting. We got to throw that in there because somebody's going to, you know, tag us somewhere. But it's...
You're right.
Putting those plants in there. And if you have maybe a flower bed or something that is mature and grown in to where those plants are kind of taking over the ground anyway, you don't necessarily have to even replenish that mulch. It might have been beneficial to get it started, but once those plants establish themselves, that they're doing the job on their own.
Yeah.
They don't need that help anymore.
And that to me is to me is really just fascinating. And I don't want to think that maybe that's where we all should go. And of course, again, we're going to talk about, you know, the tolerance at certain.
Yeah, everybody's got their level.
Everybody's got their level. But if you can get to that point where you have a living mulch in a sense, because the plants will replenish themselves. The leaves will fall. They're going to go down to the ground and they're going to compost and enhance the soil. Again, as we talked about, it'll keep the erosion down. It'll retain the soil. It'll keep the temperature down. It's a beautiful thing.
And now, the leaves themselves become a type of mulch.
Exactly.
And that can be from a large tree or a smaller plant. And there are people that will put just, you know, their oak leaves or whatever as a ground cover mulch in a space. And that is still beneficial. And those are providing kind of nitrogen goes back into the soil where your plants can use it again, all of those things. And even the grass clippings, anything that yeah. is kind of self-composting or that you've had it composted in a set area and then bring it back into your landscape, those things again are helping the health of the soil in a way like a mulch.
And you just talked about leaves or pine straw is another one. We have a lot of pines here.
Yeah.
And that can act as a mulch itself.
And it has some unique characteristics with the pH level,
right.
the things that like a more acidic soil, gardenias, blueberries. We've talked about some of those things.
Azaleas
yeah. can actually benefit from having pine bark or pine mulch that it's not dramatic, but that it can be shown that it helps to retain that pH balance where they want it on the more acidic side. So that's a useful spot. Now, here's a fun one. And this one, honestly, I'm going to geek out about. It blew my mind when one of the Florida Friendly Landscaping people talked about using Melaleuca trees as a beneficial mulch. I was like, isn't that a horrible invasive tree? They actually call it a punk tree because it contributes to wildfires. And the thing is, they are harvesting it to use as this mulch. It's not necessarily any cheaper than another kind of mulch, but it's beneficial to the ecosystem to remove that versus cypress is a very commonly found mulch in big box stores, in the bags, and you don't really know if they're harvesting it in a way that is environmentally friendly and responsible, because some cypress can be a byproduct where they've created lumber and this is just the leftovers.
Right. But a lot of times,
the demand for mulch exceeds the level of the byproduct in many cases. So then that gets into their harvesting the cypress trees for mulch. And we need those cypress trees for our wetlands. And they are keystone critical for that wetland survival. So avoiding cypress mulch in general is a good idea, honestly, because we can't know the impact that it's having if we continue to use it at the rate that we're using it now. But something like Melaleuca, we need those gone. They are harming our environment. So if you find that as a mulch, buy it. Great.
It's interesting because it says commercially sold Melaleuca mulch has been cured at high temperatures.
Right.
To kill any seeds, because that's the important piece. We don't want more Melaleuca showing
right.
up. But it also said that one study found that, an IFA study found that it was more durable than pine bark and cypress.
And it settles more slowly, so you don't get the compaction where to make the mulch effective, we really need to maintain a 2 or 3 inch layer
right.
on top of the soil. And as the organic matter breaks down, it is sinking and, you know, it's getting shorter. So we want something that's going to last longer. And that's why some people go for the inorganic, because it doesn't break down like an organic. But having this benefit of, yes, it's providing the temperature regulation. Yes, it's providing the moisture retention, but it's also lasting longer in your landscape. And it's not necessarily any cheaper than the other types of mulch that you might find. But if it lasts longer, then you could be getting the same value out of it.
So I guess, can we find this in big box stores, or is that something?
I haven't seen it a lot.
I haven't seen it myself. And yeah, I was with you, you know, blown away when I was looking at the different types of mulches and saw Melaleuca, and I'm like, what?
Right.
But it makes sense because, again, we want to get rid of it.
That's
and then what are we going to do with it? So if it is going to be a useful mulch, then that's fantastic.
I just think it's so cool. And even the eucalyptus trees, that rainbow eucalyptus is a very beautiful tree, but it is an invasive. If it's being managed and contained in like a botanical garden where you can go look at it and say, oh, that's pretty, and then make sure that it doesn't escape and take over. But how are we managing those in areas where they are starting to spread?
Right.
If we're incentivizing companies to go out and harvest them for mulch and then buying that and putting it down in our landscape, that it also lasts more than like the arborist, the utility mulch, they call it, where it's just a freshly cut tree that's ground up, that you can get that stuff for free, but it breaks down the quickest and it's the most likely to have seeds of other plants that you wouldn't want.
Now, interestingly enough, that's the type of mulch that is widely used at the botanical garden, at the
sure.
Florida Botanical Garden.
Because
that's
free.
What's used. It's free. The Urban Forestry Group here are the ones that provide that. They put that out in the back area, and that's what we do, what we mulch.
And homeowners can get utility mulch from the county at some of the parks. I know Walsingham Park is a central one that has it, and there's a phone number that you can call if it's run out, that they'll come and bring more. But most tree services, you can ask them to dump mulch. Now, you have to be able to take a truckload of it, and you have to be able to wait. I've been waiting for some for a long time and not received it yet, so I ended up finding some from a neighbor, and they were giving it away because they took a truckload. So, you know, there are creative ways to get mulch, but knowing the source and knowing what you're getting. But then, honestly, talking about the truckload kind of leads me into another geek point of how do you know how much to get, whether you're buying a bag.
So you're gonna get into this, aren't you?
Of course, you know me. So here is the IFAS recommendation. It says that Florida Friendly Landscaping recommends mulching to a depth of 3 inches. 1 cubic yard of mulch will cover 324 square feet of ground at 1 inch deep, or 108 square feet of ground at 3 inches deep. So at a 3 inch depth, 1 cubic yard of mulch will cover an area about 10 feet wide and long. So about a 10-foot square of your property. A cubic yard is, if you picture...
I was going to say, how can we... Yeah. I'm trying to picture it myself.
Just a typical full-size pickup truck, not the little tiny ones that you see, not the great big giant ones with extra wheels and all that, but just a kind of a typical size pickup truck. If you fill it up with mulch, that's going to be a cubic yard, roughly. So if you think about these truckloads that they bring out, that's probably maybe 5 or 6 cubic yards. So again, if you're trying to cover a 50-foot square of ground, then that's great. But if you really only need to fill in a flower bed, then
you don't need
that much. So you end up putting the free mulch sign in your front yard after
and somebody comes down and grabs it.
I know.
Which is really good. So now I guess the next thing from my perspective and comes to my mind is, okay, we talked about that 2 to 3 inches, but 3 inches is optimal, right? Are there some things that we shouldn't do? And I can think of one very important one in my head in terms of not how to mulch. And that's called volcano mulching.
Oh, yes.
So if you think of a volcano, just putting a big pile of mulch in one big area, that is not effective because of a lot of things what we've already talked about. I mean, in terms of not allowing the heat to dissipate, holding too much moisture. So we talked about that in principle too, water effectively, right? So we want to water efficiently and effectively, but too much water.
The roots have to breathe. So if you're creating this volcano, you have too much mulch piled up against the trunk of a tree where the root flare comes up, the transition from the roots to the actual trunk, that needs to be exposed because that needs to breathe. So the picture that you want to have in mind, rather than having this volcano surrounding the tree coming out the middle of it, you want a donut in a sense. You want it to be away from the main root zone, but then spread out along to the drip line. We're not trying to say that if you don't do everything that it's just not good enough. We're trying to say that everybody can make a difference. And even in some of our tiny lots or people that live here in multifamily dwellings and multi-story, high-rise, whatever, that you can still make a difference in our local ecology by what you do on the property that you have access to and control of. And even if it's just a couple of plants on your little patio, that those can still be selected in a way to be beneficial. So coming back to it on the scale of mulch, really to go all in, you would want to mulch the whole area under where the tree limbs and leaves stretch and cover. So you wouldn't want grass and other plants under your tree at all. So to me, I've got a whole side of my yard that is shaded by a big oak tree that am I going to take out all of those plants? Maybe not. But, you know, do I want a 20-foot circle of mulch under this big tree? That's not aesthetically pleasing. But how can I think about it differently and have things where I'm not over-fertilizing that would damage the tree or having things that need more water or less water than what the tree needs? And so planting those things in the right places, the right plants, it all always comes back.
That's what just came to my mind was, as you were talking about that, I was thinking, is somebody going to want to plant something under the tree because they want something there? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, maybe there are some shaded plants that could grow there, but is that what you really want to do?
But this is still where we're going back to, that plants can be the mulch.
Correct.
So in a way, you can still have ground cover plants there that are not competing with the larger things like the trees and the shrubs. And you can use these supplemental mulches, I'll call them that, like the bags of whatever, in between to fill in, to help it establish. And you find your level of tolerance and comfort. And even within your own household, that might be different. I know in my household, we have different opinions. The decision makers of the household have different opinions of what it should be. So we kind of find a middle ground and we manage our landscape in a way that we feel is beneficial to the environment, but also makes us happy.
Yeah. And I agree with you 100%. And I have the same thing in my household where we make compromises. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I can do something in one area that's not going to upset my spouse, then now I'm going to go ahead and do that. But that's my level of where I'm going. And maybe I won't get to level 10, but that's okay. We're making a difference. And I think that's what's really important.
I would say when we moved into our house that the property was maybe 20% Florida friendly. And I would say now it's probably 50 or 60% Florida friendly. I would love to get it to 80 or 90%, but I think my husband would be happier with like 75. So if we can get to 85, then I'll be happy.
Right. And I think that's what's important. I think that's how we make a difference with whatever we do. And so in the front of my house, I'm planting some mimosa sunshine in a little area, not very large, but I'm trying to make a little bit of a difference here and I'm trying to get them established. But I didn't put any mulch down because the way that mimosa sunshine grows is the rhizomes go out and then they're spreading. They're forming their roots, and that's how they're becoming a ground cover. And eventually, it will become a living color. But I guess I could have put some kind of mulch down, and maybe there's something that would have helped. Because right now, I am losing some soil. It is on a little incline, and that worries me.
I think the key is the right mulch in the right place. Because if you're using something maybe like composted leaf litter or something that is smaller pieces and maybe not as compact and dense, that a plant that needs to be able to spread on the surface can still do that, but it's being protected from the heat and from the moisture loss and maybe being protected a little bit from weeds popping up in that disturbed ground and exposed ground. Well, maybe it's just a matter of what to choose. And this could be a case of using something like newspaper. And that is a Florida-friendly recommendation. Okay. You want to be careful about what kind of ink it is and that there's not any glues and plastics and things. And that's where cardboard gets a little tricky because the glue that they use to create a corrugated cardboard can have some of the same effects of like a microplastic in the soil where it's not ideal. But if you're using it selectively, it can have some function. And even just the rolled paper, like the construction, I forget the brand names of it, but where they put it on the floors and walls to keep a construction crew from damaging things.
Yeah.
That it's basically chipboard kind of paper rolls.
Yeah.
I used that on some pathways and then put pine straw on top of it. And I was having a horrible time with some sedge grasses that were getting into my pathways. And that made a huge difference. So it's picking the thing for the place. But then I don't necessarily want that dense paper around the more tender plants that need to have room to spread out. So we have been talking about mulch
for
a long time. And I hope that we haven't lost our listeners by now, but I think it's fascinating. And I think it's something that we kind of take for granted in a way. And then when you really stop and think about it, there is a lot there. And it's an integral part of having that Florida-friendly landscape. And that's what we're trying to encourage here is look at the big picture. Look at what steps can I take? What can I do to make my spot in this county more Florida friendly and making Pinellas County a beautiful place to live. And so July, we have our Ready, Set, Grow.
Okay.
We'll wrap up with that.
Yeah.
What do we need to do to get ready, Alan?
Solarize the soil. I think we talked about this a little bit in our last episode.
Yeah, anytime during the hot months of the summer.
Months, you want to mulch. It would be a good thing. And cardboard could be used because, again, we're really trying to suppress any kind of weeds, but we're also trying to actually increase the soil temperature to try to kill any kind of things that are on there to get us ready for the fall season. Your irrigation, again, go
making
listen
sure
to our last episode.
Making sure that it's in working order, but
sure
then also that your timer is either turned off or has an appropriate rain sensor that will shut it off when we get these frequent rains like we're having right now.
Yep. There's no need to water these days. I know there are some days where we may have no rain for 3 or 4 or 5 days, but it's going to come.
Yeah.
And so we may need a little bit, but you shouldn't need a lot.
Also no need to fertilize
right
now.
There's no need to fertilize right now. There really isn't, and you can't. So what about setting? What should we be doing now to set our time?
Yeah, so just the general maintenance, things like your trees, that if you haven't pruned them yet, making sure that you're pruning them appropriately. And I'm going to go here a little bit, but palm trees are one of the things that we have a lot in our area that are frequently not appropriately trimmed and pruned. There's a common description that they call it a hurricane cut or a pineapple pruning. And so they cut all of the limbs up to this little clump at the top. And it looks like that top of the palm tree is like a little pineapple with the leaves coming out just at the top. And that is not healthy for the tree. And it's not really helping it in the hurricane because those leaves hold nutrients that the tree is still using until they turn completely brown. So really, when you're appropriately pruning your palm trees, you want to take off anything that is completely brown and then anything that is below the horizon mark. So you shouldn't come out with a pineapple. You should come out with at least a half circle. And that would be a healthy pruning for your palm trees to make sure that they are ready for the storms. And then other types of trees, look for what are the healthy and unhealthy branches and maybe shortening them or avoiding where something could impact a structure like your house or your pool cage or something.
And it may be beneficial to bring an arborist.
Absolutely.
Out, because these are the people that really know how to trim the trees and make them appropriate and make them ready for hurricanes.
And if they're a certified arborist, then they have had specific training in knowing how to protect the health of the tree and mitigate the risk that it could pose to your home in the storms that we have here. Yeah. So we're going to grow some stuff. And it's actually a good time still to be planting some trees. Palm trees in particular need a lot of water to get established. If you plant them in the wintertime, then you're going to have to provide that water. If you plant them in our summertime, then they're getting lots of rain. And so you shouldn't have to do as much with the supplemental watering on them. Again, an arborist or somebody who is trained in best management of green industry, they can help you get those things established well. When it comes to vegetables and even flowers, it's kind of too hot to start a lot of stuff right now. There's still some things that you can. It would be more the tropical stuff. So we have, these are hard to even pronounce, so forgive me if I'm saying them wrong, but boniato, calabaza, and chayote squash, those are things that you can still plant directly outdoors, things that you can plant from small plants, maybe herbs like mint or oregano, and even some of the shrubs, the native ones are going to do better in our heat, things like beautyberry and planting native milkweed or echinacea, or the coral honeysuckle vine is a good native one that it attracts hummingbirds and lots of pollinators. And other flowers, annuals, vinca, coleus, pentas, galardia, blue days, the evolvulus, salvias, ornamental peppers, maybe even some of the standard edible peppers. But a lot of it, you're starting to think ahead for when we start to cool down. And that's when our main growing season is going to come back, is when it gets into the cooler months. So you might want to start some things from seed inside if you have a space for that.
That's a good idea.
And then that'll save you some money because you can buy packets of seeds for a lot cheaper than the established plants that you'll find in the stores, if you can even find the right ones at the right time of year here, because they're marketing towards the average and we're different here. We find things like tomatoes out there now where they're kind of done for us. And so if you see them in the store, it's not the best time to grab them.
But they're there.
They are there. So that's why you're listening to us. That's why you're finding out what is Pinellas friendly and Florida friendly and just trying to make a difference in your little section of the world and of our county and just making it this wonderful place that we all enjoy so much, and making sure that we're contributing to the best parts of what our county has to offer instead of adding to the negatives.
We'd certainly love to hear from you all, adding comments about what you all do and any questions that you may have, because hopefully in the near future we'll have some episodes on some questions and answers.
Absolutely.
And would just love to hear from you all. Thank
you
all.
So you can reach us on the Pinellas County Extension Master Gardeners social media pages, or you can reach us at the Extension Help Desk here in Largo. And the email is in the show notes and all of the links and the resources. There's some great resources about mulch that I'm going to share in the show notes today. So check that out wherever you're listening. We're actually on the Radio St. Pete podcast show now. I don't know how often that's going to play, but you can find us on Apple and Spotify and all the places. So give us the likes and the subscribes and follows and reviews and all the good things. And we will see you next time.
Thanks for tuning into Planting Pinellas. We hope you're feeling inspired to get involved, learn more, and grow alongside this incredible community.
Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like the show, leave us 5 stars or a review. And don't forget to share with fellow plant lovers.
Until next time, keep planting, keep growing, and keep making Pinellas County a place to thrive.
This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension in Pinellas County, Florida, an equal opportunity institution.